Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Sometimes, if we are not careful, our opinions and views lead us into a type of Monty Python situation. Like in the film The Life of Brian, where the meeting comes together to discuss how to rescue somebody in difficulty, and ends up doing nothing about the situation. Because the discussion becomes progressively more and more abstract and less having to do with people. This is often the case with views and opinions regarding diet, for example, and can be a very excellent example of people becoming drunk on their own opinions. And this is often not simply they become drunk on their own opinions, but a large number of people become drunk on one another's opinions. Sometimes it's only when they sit down to talk about them do they realize that they basically disagree over even the fundamental definitions of what they're talking about. Self-righteousness can be a very ugly thing, partly because it is and can be so very certain of itself. And fresh eagerness to change the world is sometimes admirable, but sometimes just as fanatical and intolerant as any other form of intolerance. Respect for others, which is the essential nature of the Four Wisdoms, for example, requires that we not dismiss the take that others have on something. Particularly that we don't dismiss it in an abstract way. That is, dismiss other people without talking to them. A good deal of perfectionism regarding diet, for example, arises out of fear. The fear of looking at oneself, which is actually the source of many political movements, for that matter. The fear of looking at oneself and realizing that one is imperfect and that one is the cause of one's own suffering. It is one of the reasons why many people can't sit down to meditate. But the problem is, there is no way around this. There is no way around looking at oneself. Sooner or later, we have to look at oneself, ourselves. Sooner or later, we have to address our own basic selfishness, our own pettiness. Reverend Master Tiu talked about her motivation in going to Japan, that she thought she went to Japan in order to find out why suffering existed, why World War II had occurred. How could there be so much cruelty in the world? And she described herself in so doing as actually extremely naive, when in fact what she should have been asking is why was she as she was? Many people use their opinions like a cudgel to beat other people. There is, it is said, a Hindu saying that the only thing worse than eating meat is looking down on those who do. And also we run into difficulties in this area when we take the passing and impermanent for the permanent, when we take the long-lasting for the short-lasting. People as human beings come out with all sorts of different views. They are often in no position to make those views come to pass. So immediately bludgeoning them because their views are not in line with one's own or with one's friends, with those of one's friends. The bludgeoning of others happens with no recognition that this may be something that passes, that this view that one doesn't like another person may be something that is quite impermanent, and that if one bludgeons them, one will cause the view in the other person to become fixed. The thicket of views is also what stands in the way of us realistically looking at what goes on in the world and being able to be of genuine help. This is the reason that the old cook said to Dogen about training and practice. He said, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And River Master Ji said once to a monk, that doesn't mean 2, 6, 1. It means to start from where you are, to start dismantling the house of the self from where you are, from in front of your toes, from what touches your toenail or your fingertips. Sometimes bludgeoning other people means to crush their hopes or to ignore their situations or to present them with impossible ideals. This is particularly so in diet, where a lot of the trends that go on in the world and in many of our lives are actually completely restricted to people who have the money, the time, and the money, the education, and the leisure to pursue them. We have an example that stares us in the face all the time where we are living, where the green agenda of the big city results in the suffering of the small communities. Because the green agenda in the big city only simply wishes to get rid of their waste. They do not really care where it goes. Or the other recent example where the garbage of, again, the big city has ended up in a small country far away. These agendas sometimes arise out of a type of purity, a type of fanaticism. When we recite the five thoughts, and we say we must think deeply of the ways and means by which this food has come, this is not to determine how pure our food is. It is in order that we may express gratitude and offer merit to all those who have participated in it arriving at our doorstep. There is a saying about not trying to leap beyond the great round mirror, and this is very applicable in this particular case. I remember having a discussion once with somebody who talked about the necessity, the overwhelming necessity of reducing the birth rate in large countries like India, because they were consuming so much of the world's resources. And I put it to them, in actual fact, it is we in our society who consume way too much of the world's resources. And sometimes by our purity obsessions, we consume even more of them. To understand the ridiculousness of this, try picturing some of the diets that have become widespread in the West, and picture them trying to impose them on the poor or the starving in refugee camps. Think of how ridiculous that is. Think of how selfish that is. And then walk back several steps into one's own life and have a look at how selfish that is. Dogen said, in terms of monks and what they do, he said in his discussion about the kesa, for example, in monks' robes, he said, people will say to avoid this particular type of material and use that particular type of material because this particular type of material involves the suffering of creatures. And he points out that the other type of material that people think is blameless also involves the suffering of creatures. And that for monks it is far better not to discriminate, to to accept what is given to us, to accept what comes our way. Without thinking that we somehow deserve it, which again is one of those traps of opinions. What will people do who are so obsessed with such things when they are faced within the next few years with the circumstances where they will not be able to obtain these things that they have pinned their hearts and their ideologies on? They will be utterly lost. There's a rather wicked thing that C.S. Lewis wrote in the Screwtape Letters, which I don't particularly like, but which he makes a very interesting point. The Screwtape Letters are ostensibly about a quote-unquote demon who is trying to corrupt mankind. Not a very Buddhist notion, but there you go. And so this demon is instructing his nephew on all the different points in which human beings can be convinced to deceive themselves. And so he talks about the especial opportunities in gluttony. And he talks about somebody who, when visiting somebody and being asked whether they would like some tea, first of all refusing, and then saying, oh, only if it's this particular type of tea, I'm very particular, and only if there's this particular type of biscuit that goes with it. And that the person thinks of themselves as not causing trouble to others. And yet they are a monster of selfishness. In the same way, many people think that they will benefit the world by what they're doing or choosing to do, when sometimes it is actually sheer unmitigated selfishness. It is why many of the spiritual traditions in the world, when asked how does one truly do the spiritual path, have sometimes rather radically, like Jesus of Nazareth, sell all you have and give to the poor. And in the story, it says that the man who to whom this was recommended went away sorrowful because he was very rich. As Dogen says, when we come to die, and we will all come to die, we will all come to illness. That when we come to die, the only thing supporting us will be our beneficial deeds. Neither spouse, nor children, nor wealth, nor position. can we take through the door of death? Why then, it is of utmost importance, as Dogen says, that we spend our days in selfless activity. And although, as Kazon said, teachers have pointed this out for generations, still people do not see it. When people hear Dogen saying, one must train as if one's hair are on fire, they think of it as running about. And, of course, the whole point of meditation is to replenish the spirit. One could say the whole benefit of meditation is because of its uselessness. As Seki Kodo said, Zazen is good for nothing. It is in that where its benefit is. For it is neither accumulating nor pushing away. It is neither shoving one another aside or trying to get ahead of them or putting them down. It is not speaking sharply to others or trying to undermine them. It is simply sitting, letting go of all that we usually hang on to. And thus developing the habit of letting go, rather than grasping onto. Human societies rise and fall, sometimes spectacularly, so that they're written up in future history books. Sometimes slow and creakily, to the point where they collapse under their own weight. What will you do then? What will you do when the great winds of impermanence arise? What will you do when everything you know and rely upon is swept aside? Will you hanker over lost time and be unable to find peace because there is so much one needs to do? One of the interesting experiences that I myself had was when I fell a number of years ago from a ladder and shattered my right leg. The interesting experience was that as I lay there, having shattered it, there was nothing I could do. Nothing I could do. Nothing. I had to lay there and let myself be taken care of or otherwise let someone phone the ambulance. As I was lifted onto the ambulance and taken down our road and over all the hills and bumps and rocks to get down to the hospital, there was nothing I could do. It is then that one falls back upon whatever training one has or one's learning of having to sit. And I also saw that there is sitting and the results that are theoretical. And then there are those when one finds oneself in the situation. And one has had ideals that sitting still will be gliding along blissfully. Rather than difficult, requiring effort, requiring letting go. One of the most important things that Tendo Nyojo said to Dogen, when Dogen came up with all sorts of ideas and theories, this is the way Buddhism works, this is what Nirvana actually means, you know, is it this way or that way? And Tendo Nyojo said, leave all that aside. Just do not think that it is easy. Once you realize that it is you who have to pick yourself up and make yourself go along the path and climb over the stiles and move the rocks out of the way. Once you realize that it is you who have to do this, then there is far less time for the thicket of views, opinions, and selfishness. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.